The thing I feel like is the craziest was some dumb party that I did C-3PO at that was on a boat. And it wasn't crazy because anything bad happened or anything, but like my one phobia in that costume is falling in water, like, because I wouldn't be able to swim. So I'm on this big boat up on like the deck, and I'm just like, one of these drunk college kids wants to shove me off the side, I will die. You know, that was in my brain of all the things, that was probably like the weirdest.
Welcome back to the Make or Break show, where each week we bring you stories of incredible makers and their make or break moments that have defined them along the way. I'm your host, Brandon Cullum, and this week we chat with Gordon Tarpley, one of the go-to guys in the prop building world for C-3PO. We get into his journey and process in both 2D and 3D mediums. What is up, guys? Welcome back to the show. As always, we have another fun one for you guys this week. If you are interested in at all prop building, droid making, then we've got a fun one with you. We're hanging out with Gordon Tarpley today, who's calling in from Los Angeles. He is an awesome prop builder. He's done a bunch of different things across the board on the art side of things, whether it's a matte painting to clay modeling to casting, the 3D printing and modeling, 3D now. And he does some really, really cool stuff. And so you guys are going to enjoy this one. But before we jump into the interview, let you guys know a couple things we got going on right now. We have a giveaway. So we just hit 5K followers over on Instagram. And if you guys would like to win some pretty cool stuff from people like Tools Today, Rockler, Rigid, and General Finishes, if you head over to makeorbreakshop.com/giveaway. We got some fun stuff for you guys that you can win over there. And as always, the show is brought to you by our wonderful supporters over on Patreon. We have a new patron this week. And first off, I apologize. I'm going to butcher your name because he is Norwegian. This is Stian Sorhus. Thank you so much for the support. And if you guys would like to support the show, you can head over to patreon.com/makeorbreakshow. There's a bunch of different reward levels, a bunch of different things that we have for you guys that you can get. And just your support helps the show come out every week. All right, so let's jump into our interview with Gordon. All right, guys, I want to welcome you back to the Make or Break show. We're hanging out with prop builder, 3D modeler, 2D artist extraordinaire, Mr. Gordon Tarpley today, calling in all the way from LA. Thank you so much for jumping on and chatting with me. Man, you have a ton of like adjectives, I feel like, besides your name. Like, as I go deeper and deeper into what you do, like, how do you describe yourself to people when people, they have that no...
It is always tricky because I feel like any one of the things I do doesn't cover all the other stuff that I do, but yeah. If I start getting into all the things that I do, it sounds ridiculous. So I kind of try to, I just say prop builder and maker usually, and artist. I do, you know, I've done artwork for years, all the way back. I used to do t-shirt illustration for years, and then as graphic designer, and did architectural illustration, and just a lot of different types of artwork. So I came from a real like creative background.
That's cool. Did I see when you were growing up that your dad was a prop builder? Like, is that kind of what got you into that world?
Yeah. So my dad did video production for most of my life. He worked for Pratt & Whitney, which is an aircraft company.
Yeah, yeah.
And he did a lot of their trade show production work. So this is back before we had CG work, you know, CG computer models and all that. So whenever they needed planes and things flying across screen or like creative shots of this, he'd have to build the models just like you would at like any like Hollywood production. It's the exact same kind of work. So I grew up from like the early 80s. We had Cinefex magazine in my house, so I was really exposed to, you know, that aspect of movie making that I don't think most of the people where I grew up, I lived in Florida, by the way. So okay. You know, not like LA, this stuff's everywhere. Everybody here knows about it. But when I was in Florida, it was not a common thing. But my dad would build these really, really intricate, highly detailed models of planes that didn't exist yet or engines that didn't exist yet. It fascinated me. And always having those magazines around. And my dad just knew about all these film techniques because he was always filming stuff. So when I grew up, when we looked at movies, he would... you know, people are like, oh, he spoiled it for you. But I don't think so. He would always point to everything in the film and be like, they did this, like, you know, he'd tell me how it was done. And, you know, he was always trying to figure out, if he didn't know, he would try to figure it out. And he's like, I think they did this or that. A lot of times he would end up being right. Extend effects would come out and see the technique. So it's just really influenced by that a lot.
That's cool. So were you also building like models and stuff as a kid because of that?
I did some, but not, I mean, they were terrible. The ones my dad did were beautiful. I used to have some hanging up in my room. There's like, you know, we take a picture of them, they look like a real airplane kind of thing. And the photo, mine looked like a 6-year-old built it with like glue coming off the sides, and it was rotten. But I mean, I still wanted to make things all the time. So that part of it was, influence. Like I would make little sets for like my action figures and all kinds of stuff like that. So
that's cool.
It encouraged me for sure.
Yeah.
Or inspired me.
So, but art then sounds like that's kind of a through line throughout. Like were you always drawing? And
always. And everybody in my family did art. So I had, both my grandmothers did artwork. One of them did murals and lots of paintings, and the other one did paintings and, like ceramic work and sculpture. On both sides, both of my grandfathers did some kind of creative work. My grandfather on my dad's side was a musician. He was like a assistant dean of music at University of Miami and a dean of music for 2 years at the University of Miami, a pianist. And then on my mom's side, my grandfather did, you know, tons of woodwork, just really creative, like always making things and always fixing his own stuff. Like I never saw him take any car to a repair shop ever my whole life. So that kind of like figuring out the problems, but also figuring out creative solutions to it, I kind of get from him, I think.
Yeah.
And then both my parents did photography and are both really good artists. They can draw and paint. And it was a thing. Like, and if I was bored, it was like, here's some stuff to make things with, you know?
Yeah.
Be it like Legos or clay or, you know, do something creative, build something. So
what was the craziest thing you built like as a kid?
As a kid, let's see. When I was like 11 or 12, I made a samurai costume that was pretty involved for a kid. I think of my age, especially where I was growing up, nobody was doing stuff like that. I had it in me. I'm like, I want to make a samurai costume for Halloween. So I spent like 2 months, you know, making this ridiculous thing. It came out pretty good for a kid version of a costume.
I
had like the helmet, and I, you know, figured out all these weird solutions to put everything together. So I was pretty proud of that. Since then, I made a lot of bizarre stuff since then. I don't know if I have one thing that's the craziest. I mean, behind me, I've got a stormtrooper costume. That was, I did like probably almost 20 years ago, like probably 18 years ago. And I built a vacuum form machine, and it was a lot of steps. My roommates thought it was crazy. I kind of just truck forward with whatever it is I'm making until it's done.
Yeah.
And, so I just look at the steps in these like little, you know, compartmentalized sections. So each part is just like, oh, I just got to do this one thing. And it's not, I'm not looking at the big picture and like all the, I think people look at it like a car engine, like they see all the pieces and it looks complicated, but each little piece is not really all that hard. It's just a lot of steps.
Right,
you know?
Right.
So I got a lot of projects like that where it took a ton of small steps that individually weren't terrible, but the overall was, I guess, ended up adding up to a lot.
So 20 years ago, when you made that stormtrooper, was there any, like, were people out there doing stuff like that? Or are you kind of just figuring it out as you go?
Yeah. I got encouraged. There was a site called, it was like Build Your Own Stormtrooper. And it was, trying to remember the guy's names. And they showed how to make the vacuum form table and build and do the plastic bucks and everything. So I was really encouraged by that. And I got my hands on a stormtrooper suit, but it was, had issues, like the chest was wrong. And I basically pulled molds out of that and then reshaped them a little bit so that it would be more accurate, and then did new castings. But I built, you know, built a vacuum form table, did all my own molds and everything off of it. So it was a lot of work. My roommates wanted to murder me. Like, what do you, the kitchen's all destroyed right now. You know, I'm like baking plastic in the oven and stuff, like stuff you shouldn't do, but
that's awesome. I
don't know better.
Yeah. So it was cast out of plastic. Is that?
Yeah. It's all vacuum form plastic. And, it's a look, the mannequin's terrible right now. I need to get a new one, but it's, But it's the helmet actually on this one was made by a friend of mine. And I've got a helmet that I made with it, but it's wrong. So this one's better. So when I swapped it out like 2 years ago, 3 years ago.
That's awesome. All right. So looking behind you, the majority of the stuff, I think all the stuff I see is Star Wars related. Did you just fall in love with Star Wars the first time you saw it in the theaters? Like, what was your story?
Yeah, I think it was the first movie I ever saw. So I was born in 76. Okay. And my parents took me to see it when I was like a year old. And then I remember seeing it as a little kid. And I think that we got to go back when I was like two, because I think it came back out in the theater. I have a memory of this. I don't know if it's my very first time seeing it or the second time, but it was when I was really young. I mean, I have packages from toys from when I was a kid that I saved because I was like obsessed with the pictures on them.
Yeah.
And some of them are like first generation Star Wars packaging, you know, like, and I mean, I got a box up here somewhere and I'm like, oh my God, I still have this thing, you know, like, so yeah, I was really obsessed since I was a kid. My mom's like, we ruined you by taking you to see that movie. Cause look at, waste all your time on this.
Right. So did you want to like make your own props from the movie? Like, was that something you always were interested in too?
Or did it kind of come later? It wasn't so much that I wanted to make them. I didn't think about it like that. It's almost more like I just wanted to have them.
Got it. Okay.
And the only way I could have some of the things was to like, you know, to make like the best version of it that I could. So I've got, since I was a kid, like 20 iterations of Stormtrooper blasters that like what my kid head thought they looked like. I would like make them out of pipes or like take existing toy guns and modify them so they kind of had the same shape. I was just like really obsessed with that kind of thing. They're all wrong, but you know, my kid brain, I was like, it was getting closer and closer each time I'd make one. So, and this is the thing, I just wanted to have it. Nobody sold one. I think Kenner came out with one when I was a kid that was pretty close, but it was still something's not right about it. And, so I was like, you know, doing modifications to that. They're also bad, but you know, in my head, they were like, it needs this piece on it. It doesn't have it. So I got to fix it.
Yeah. That's awesome. Okay. So coming back to, maybe more of your, professional work before you really got into props.
Okay.
I don't know if this was right, but I saw somewhere that you designed a Florida license plate.
Is that a long time ago? Yeah. I did the artwork on it and it was like laid out. I might actually have one within reaching distance of here. I don't know. It was for Share the Road. It's a bike safety license plate. Yeah. I used to race bicycles. So it was sort of randomly approached because my friends knew that I did like graphic design.
Right.
But I don't know that they approached me because of my cycling, but I was a cyclist for a long time. I could race bicycles. So I was really into this idea. And, that was like my first piece of artwork that I think a lot of people saw because it was on like 10,000 plus cars in Florida. So you'd see them, you know, driving around all the time. But the project, I did all these drawings for these like people on bicycles, and the person that was in charge of it wanted like a little kid on a bike with like a little flag. And I was trying to explain to them like this, those aren't the people who are getting hit by cars. Right. It's always like these road cyclists. And I went in and coaxed them that was the way to go. And we started doing these different iterations of the drawings and they kept changing them. And I did this one page, like a sheet with, I don't know, 10 or 20 drawings on it, little thumbnail sketches. And I turned it into the company and I didn't hear back from them for like 5 days or something. And I called, I was like, hey, any word on any of those sketches? Did they like any of them? They're like, oh yeah, they picked one. It went off to the Department of Transportation and got approved. So a thumbnail sketch, it wasn't really supposed to be like my final sketch, is what ended up on the license plate. So I had this really mixed feeling because I always wanted to redraw it real nice. And it just is what it is. It went out and I was like, all right, they approved it. So I could see it everywhere. I was like really happy about that. But it also was like not my favorite piece of artwork. And then later they made it like 10 years. I think it went for about 10 years with that plate. And then they updated the plate and changed it a bit. And I like the new one more. And I can't guarantee it, but I think that it's got my artwork on it also because it looks just like one of my other sketches. However, I've not confirmed it. So I don't want to take credit for it if I'm wrong, but it looks just like one of the ones I submitted to them. Since I live in California, I have all like my Florida plates. I really think they're like right around me somewhere. I have a bunch of stuff like just off to the side of the camera, like big piles of stuff. would love to hold it up, but
yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, you're definitely the first one I've talked to that's designed a license plate. That's pretty funny. That's cool.
Yeah, again, that was like my first thing that was out in the wild. Right. That was like a piece of something that I made that just was everywhere. Like I would see it every day when I lived in Florida. So that was cool. I remember seeing one like New York one time. I was out visiting, we were driving, and I saw the Florida plate was the one I did. I was like, oh my God, there's my plate. That's in New York right now. So it's goofy, but it's sort of a neat thing to be able to be part of, I guess.
Yeah. How long did you cycle? Do you still?
I still ride from time to time, not as much as I'd like. I would say, let's see, from probably for good, I'm trying to think the last time I did a race, I had already moved to Tampa, probably like 10 or 12 years, like from probably 90, maybe longer than that, like 96, I think I kind of got started into like being a little more serious about it and riding often in a race mountain bikes for, I don't know, probably 6 or 7 years. And then I moved to Tampa and I was like, cycling there was scary. And I still would do a race every once in a while. I haven't done one in a while, but I still have bikes hanging right above me in my shop. Cool. And then I still ride whenever I get a chance, but it's not as often as I would like.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't get anywhere crazy into cycling, but I live in Athens, Georgia. And
it's pretty,
and we have a really cool like criterium they do downtown.
Which is
a ton of fun. So I saw that and I was like, oh, I need to start riding. And then I got out on the roads. So I'm like, okay, let me get with other people.
Criteriums are scary. Those are like the super aggressive, and they have like the, you know, the laps, the sprints for the, you know, like, ring the bell, and then everybody goes nuts, and it's like terrifying. I've watched a bunch of my friends break collarbones and those things and stuff, and I'm like,
it's like, you know which turn to go to because that's where most of the folks crash. And then my wife's like, let's not go there, let's go to like where they're safe. So
let's go where it's exciting and scary, you know.
Okay, so what brought you to Los Angeles?
I saw people making stuff, and all the time I'm through online forums. I was doing a lot of matte painting when I was doing architectural work for a long time. And I really started to get into the idea of doing matte painting work, which is almost identical to doing architectural work. Like the actual steps involved are almost exactly the same. So I got on all these forums for like matte painting and started doing like competitions with that. And they were going well. So I ended up meeting people that were working in the film industry. And this was like 2007, 2008. And a lot of them lived here in LA. So I kind of had it in my head then. I was like, I should move to LA, just get a job doing matte painting work. And then like the financial dip happened and all this stuff went bad. And all these companies moved out of Los Angeles and they went to like Vancouver and Singapore and, you know, not in LA anymore. So the work here, it didn't dry up. There's still plenty of work, but when you're on the outside, it doesn't look like that. But I still... there's so much creative stuff going on here that I was like, I still really want to go to LA. So I kind of had it in my head since like 2008, probably. And then, I started getting more into like prop and costume building stuff. And then I started the same thing, started like get stronger in my head again. Like, oh, there's a lot of that work out there. I'm following all these people that are in LA and they're always doing awesome stuff. So 2013, we came out to visit. And I, you know, tried to coax my wife into coming out here forever. And she seemed like, yeah, that sounds good. But I could tell it wasn't serious. So once we came out in 2013 and she saw it, and it was my first time coming out here as well. And it was just, I was like, I have to move here. It's amazing. There's like mountains off to the side. And there's beautiful ocean. There's good waves because I surf as well. So there's really, really good surfing. There's mountains, which I was in Florida, so never had mountains. And in the winter, I can go to snow in like an hour. I can just drive and go hike in the snow in the mountains. It's amazing. So, yeah, like just in that aspect alone, not outside of all the building stuff, I was like, this place is amazing. And then once I got out here and started to see all the opportunities, it was crazy. And I still worked with my architectural renderings. When I got here, I worked for a place in Rhode Island. So I just sort of moved from Florida to here. I still have my same job. And then I started getting more and more freelance kind of work. And so I quit my job like about a year and a half ago. I actually put it in my notice for my work almost 2 years ago, but it took a little while to get me out of the job.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's creative wise, it's one of the best places I've ever been.
So
much to do.
So were you wanting to get into the prop side of movies? Like, was that kind of your angle when you first got out here?
It's sort of crazy. I never think about stuff so far. Like, I like the idea of doing that, and I just want to make stuff. And if it can be in the movies, that's awesome. If it's for other things, that's fine too. I just kind of want like a constant output of like, just here's a random task to do. And like that kind of thing is stimulating to me. I always liked the idea of working in films. And to go back kind of what my dad did, when I was a kid, I would have loved to have done the stuff my dad was doing, like building those models and that kind of work. But right around the time I graduated high school was right around the time Jurassic Park came out. Mm. So all that stuff changed. It became all like digital, like all the stuff, all the digital stuff is going to take over. And I wasn't opposed to that at all. I actually kind of thought that would be neat too, but it was insanely expensive to go to the schools for that at the time. And to own your own computer, it was literally like a $20,000 computer you'd have to have in your house, which I couldn't afford. So I kind of put all that stuff on back burner. And now I'm kind of like full circle. Like now I'm literally using computers to make props. So I haven't done any big budget film stuff yet, but I've done commercials, like some decent commercials. And I've done like a good scale, like independent kind of production work, which is pretty fun. It's the same stuff. Like I work with people that do the exact same techniques for films. They just have a big shop so they can, you know, they get approached first. But yeah, it's pretty good. So
I did, I've done another podcast in the past that was more on the animation, like illustrator side of things.
Yeah.
And a lot of those guys, especially the older ones, they talk about that transition from 2D to 3D and how it's difficult. Was that going back at it now? Because I mean, now when I see your stuff, like you're in ZBrush, like doing like a C-3PO, like was that difficult for you, that process?
Not really at all. Kind of, honestly, like I feel like it's almost the same thing. Like I sculpt in clay and then I can go sculpt in ZBrush and in my brain, it occupies the same space pretty much. So one or the other, like one is the clay is messier, not bad, but you know, like you have to have a thing out, like a sculpture and, you know, ball of clay on the side that you're working with and tools. And then the computer, you just shut your laptop and then you're done, you know? And so in that regard, it's good. And it's really easy to do like mock-ups for people on the computer. And it's, you know, it's easy to do make a maquette in clay. You can do that pretty quick. But if somebody wants to change it, then you have to like re-sculpt the whole thing. But with the digital, you can just, it's the same thing, but you just save a new version and just re-sculpt it. Yeah. And you can go back and forth. So there's like pluses and minuses to each one, but it actual creatively, like they feel the same to me. Like when I sit down to sculpt either way, it feels this, like it occupies the same place in my brain. If that makes sense.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. So is ZBrush, is that what you mostly model with? Or are you also using
In the last year, I've done a lot more ZBrush than I've used ZBrush for a long time, but not a lot until the last year. Probably I've really like put it to, I've been trying to make it do a lot of the stuff that I want to do. Before that, I used 3D Studio Max for years because I was working in architectural rendering, so I was got really good at modeling there. And now, the last year or so, I've been using Fusion 360 quite a bit. Fusion 360 is amazingly powerful, and it's for me and my income level, it is still free, which is good. Hopefully I don't like go too far. I don't mind paying for it if I have to, but it's one of those, like, it's nice that I just hit update and it's free updates all the time. And it's really powerful. It does certain tasks much better than 3D Studio Max does. And 3D Studio Max was like thousands of dollars. And this program is, you know, handles things. I mean, like just last night, for example, I had to rescale a piece that I'd made, a C-3PO part I was working on. I realized it was like a little bit off, but it had all this detail and there's like these cutouts and screw holes and all this stuff. And in Fusion 360, all I had to do was like update one profile. And if you model it right, everything else will update around it. So all the knurling and the screw holes and all the cut marks and everything updated perfectly. And all I had to do was one little modification. It was fantastic. In 3 Studio Max, that would have been a nightmare. Yeah. So I like Fusion 360 for like technical, like mechanical kind of things mostly. So, and then ZBrush is, you know, more organic, but I'm getting better at making like hard surface kind of stuff. Oh, cool. So pretty fun.
I've always heard ZBrush described as like, it's a single tool, but it's like a really, really, really powerful tool. It's like, it's not, you don't have the full tool set with it, but if you want to do a specific, like the modeling task, like it's hard to beat.
Yeah. Oh, it's awesome. I mean, the one thing is that like modeling stuff with really accurate dimensions, there's ways to do it, but I'm not good at that in ZBrush yet. So if I need like a really specific scale, I typically will just go to like one of the like Fusion or 3D Studio Max, and then I can type in my exact dimensions and it comes out. And ZBrush works in units. You don't really have like, there's no inches or centimeters or millimeters. It just kind of, you kind of like have to know what the units equal out to in your head, which is fine. But even then, it kind of like, if you hit like one of the smoothing groups on it or something, it'll sometimes the parts will actually change scale a little tiny bit, just real subtle. But when you print it, it's like, oh, this isn't quite what I wanted. So I always bring in some kind of like solid reference. Like this is, I, you know, make like a cylinder or something, another program that I know is, gotcha, some exact scale. And then I can work around that. I'll just have it in there. I can flip it on and off. Yeah, other than that, it's really amazing. I'm getting a lot better too at like making really, really clean mechanical kind of shapes. Cool. That kind of feature, when I first started, ZBrush wasn't really a thing. I started before version 2, and I think that kind of stuff started to get better around version 4. So it had like a while it was just strictly like organic kind of modeling. So into an architectural stuff, you don't need that too often. Sometimes it would like, hey, make these pillows on this bed look awesome, you know, and then take a 3D model of pillow and wrinkle it, or, you know, that kind of stuff. That's but cool. I didn't get to do it a ton.
So are you using like a stylist and like a...
Yeah, definitely. It would be very difficult to do it without one, I think. I've seen people that do still use a mouse and they just, it's like magic. I don't know how they do it, but like the stylus, it feels really intuitive to me. And I don't have one of the tablets where you're drawing directly on the screen. Yeah. It's just like a little pad in front of my computer. Feels fine to me though.
Gotcha. Okay. So go into C-3PO. When did you have the first, like, why did you start the build? Was there like...
So C-3PO is a costume that I was always super fascinated with since I was a little kid. And then I think around 2007, when I started doing the architectural stuff, maybe 2006, I was making enough money that I was like, I could probably like make a C-3PO now. And then I started researching it. And I initially wanted to buy one of those Don Post statues.
Okay.
And then I saw that people had been recasting those statues. So I was like, well, maybe I can get to recast and like actually make it into a suit, you know? And then I stumbled across this forum where people had already been like working on them. So there are people that are already making some of the parts. So like the suit behind me here is like some of the bigger pieces on this suit are purchased from some other builders. I made the head and all of the greebles. And around me, like just off camera, I've got C-3PO parts everywhere that I've made. So I'm working on a new suit now that's going to be completely made by me. But they had all these resources. So there's people, different people make different parts. And I basically went out and I bought like the initial big pieces and I 3D modeled. That's my first delve into 3D printing too, is all the small greebly pieces were just terrible. The ones that came with the costume parts I bought were really bad. So I wanted to update them. So I 3D modeled them and searched everywhere to find a place to print them, because it was like 2011 or 2012. It was not quite to the point where it is now with like those desktop 3D printers that were very expensive, and the quality was okay. So I had to hunt around everywhere. A friend of mine's like, hey, there's this place called Shapeways, which was sort of new at the time, and they would print the parts for me. So that became like a really handy resource. So every small piece on the suit was remodeled and printed, and a lot of them I've now molded and copied, and then found out I didn't like them and remodeled them and done the full steps again. Remodeled and printed and everything. But but that was it. I was just obsessed with the costume more than the character. And then when I started to get the parts, I wasn't even sure that I would be able to fit in the suit. I kind of figured I would just have it on display. And then once it turned out, I was like skinny enough to fit in it. I was like, oh, I could do this. This is awesome. And then it kind of it just took off from there.
What was it like putting it on the first time and then seeing yourself in the suit?
It was interesting because like I was skinny enough to fit in it, but it was still very snug on me. Like I actually weighed, when I first started getting the parts, I weighed about 17 pounds more than I do right now. And, I think I weighed like a little under 150 when I first put it on. I remember it being like really snug and I was like, this is kind of freaky because it bolts together, you know? Yeah, and I remember like, it was okay when I stayed in there, but if I started to walk and I had to just even breathe like a little bit, I was like, oh my God, this is like, you know, I kind of had to like figure out like a zen state to not freak out. And now that I'm not down to like, I weigh between like 140 is kind of my average. I, you know, go between like 138, 142. And now it's like, it's fine. It fits pretty easy. But at the time it was like, it was just that extra like 5 or 6 pounds really makes a big difference in the way it fits. The first time I saw myself in it, it was all just gray. Like the gold came way later. Okay. So, you know, it's just working on getting the parts together. And like when I first finally got all the pieces where they're kind of wearable, because even though the pieces were purchased, you have to do a lot of work to them to like, you know, set them up and, you know, cut things and modify things. So it took a few months before I was even to that stage. And I remember getting my wife to help me like climb into the thing and standing in it. She took all these pictures. I found couple of them the other day. I'll email them to you if you want to see them.
Yeah.
It's really like, it was weird. I remember standing there really stiff, not knowing like, it feels weird to move. You know, you can't touch your own face. I couldn't touch my hands together. You notice a lot of things really quick, like your limitations. But yeah, I get used to it really quickly. So it's fine now, but, yeah, it was interesting. I remember like, it's weird to look at it because I go stand in front of a mirror and it's still like, even though I'm in it, it's kind of bizarre to see this character standing there that I've looked at for so long. Yeah. So.
So I've watched a bunch of your videos, but then especially seeing you in the costume, like the acting component of it, I guess I never really thought of like, that's a big deal to sell it. Like, was that something that came natural or was it like, I want to, because it feels like you had to work on that some.
I definitely had to work on it. And there's, from the first time I put it on, I wanted to do it right. Cause before the first time I like stepped out anywhere with it on, I saw people's reaction to it. And I was like, okay, like, I don't want to mess this up for anybody. You know, I kind of had like that, I call it like the Santa Claus effect, you know, you don't want to do anything that's like out of character. Yeah. And I wanted to kind of perform it correctly, but it didn't hit me how much I wanted to perform it correctly until like the first interaction with people. And I was like, this is like real to them. You know what I mean? So then it was kind of like, okay, I got to get this performance, you know, better. I still work on it all the time. And the best thing for me was like getting video. Like if someone took video anywhere, I could see things I was doing and I would like recall like a movement. If it looked right or looked bad, I would try to, you know, either keep it or throw it out. Or sometimes like there's things that feel right that are, sorry, hold on, got a little weird alert here. There are things that would feel right, but they would look totally off when you would see it on video. So it's like, oh, I got to adjust this whole movement or, you know, try to get the voices, you know, as close as possible.
Yeah.
And not speaking the same way Anthony Daniels does is you know, a hurdle for me. But it's definitely a thing. I still work on it. You know, I walk around the house and I have the posture. My wife's like, stop, knock it off. and people make fun of me now. Cause I do it now involuntarily, just in conversation. I'll just do a thing with my arms and they're like, oh, you're doing the 3PO thing again.
Yeah. 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 I was reading through the comments of one of the videos and they're like, he's like a human C-3PO. Like even without the costume on, I was like, that's funny. Have you worn it in some pretty crazy places? Like, do you have some like outside of like conventions and stuff, just any cool memories that stand out?
Well, there's one standout thing that kind of got me in trouble with Lucasfilm and all that. It was involuntarily. Cause I was told that it was an approved it was approved by Lucasfilm, and it was not. I did a GQ shoot with Amy Schumer. And I was on the cover of GQ magazine, which I didn't know was going to be a cover shoot. I didn't have any idea. Like, when it came out, I am on the cover right now. In my, that was pretty crazy. As far as like profile things that people have seen, that would probably be the one, the craziest one. The other stuff, let's see. I've done a lot of different YouTube shoots for Maker Studios, which is Maker's owned by Disney.
Okay.
So they, you know, would hit me up like, hey, we need C-3PO for this, that, or the other. And I've done stuff for like the JonTron channel, which I don't know if you watch YouTube stuff at all. Yeah. But he's like giant, giant YouTube channel. They've built like huge sets and everything for shoots that are crazy. But of all the things, the one, the thing I feel like is the craziest was some dumb party that I did C-3PO at that was on a boat. And it wasn't crazy because anything bad happened or anything, but like my one phobia in that costume is falling in water.
Oh, geez.
Like, because I wouldn't be able to swim. Yeah. So I'm on this big boat up on like the deck, and I'm just like, one of these drunk college kids wants to shove me off the side, I will die. You know, that was in my brain of all the things, that was probably like the weirdest. I've done some shoots in the desert, a couple, two or three. Three shoots in the desert. One time it was like 108 degrees out. And being in the costume was interesting.
Yeah.
Wasn't as hot as I would expect, honestly. I thought it was going to be worse in the costume, but it wasn't so bad. But my literally the bottoms of my shoes were like melting a little bit. So like I got done and my shoes are all like torn up on the bottom from being so hot. But the suit kind of reflects the sun off. So I got in there and it's hot, but it's not. Not as bad as I expected, just being in the sun. So that was interesting.
Yeah. Have you gotten any crazy reactions, especially from kids when they see you?
Kids are mixed. Like some kids just don't know. I get crazy reactions from adults.
Really?
Like people probably like in their 40s, like freak out. The craziest one I had, I met these Japanese girls in a convention in Florida. And they were like crying and stuff, you know, like they came around and they're freaking out. And I was like, oh my gosh, don't screw this one up. Cause you know, what's funny is I've met multiple groups of Japanese, specifically Japanese girls, that they lose their mind more than any other like batch of people that I've been. I don't know if it's like, if it's a Japanese cultural thing with the robots or something, I have no idea what it is, but it's awesome. Like being in there and you see them, like these people look at you. That's another thing about being in there is you get this weird sense of what it must be like to be like Brad Pitt or George Clooney or something where you see the people's eyes, they're looking in your eyes, but they're seeing C-3PO, but you're like taking in every bit of their excitement. Like, you know, through those little eye holes. That's a very interesting feeling to see, you know, like I've been to conventions and you have like celebrity people that are signing autographs, stop everything and like run out to go get a photo with you, you know, and you have a tap on your shoulder and you turn around and it's like, oh, hey, dude, it's like people I've seen in Star Wars or something, you know, like hanging out next to me. Like, I gotta get a picture. I'm like, this is so weird.
That's so cool.
That part's interesting. It's like, even if they're not hyper excited, but you can see it in their eyes a little bit. That's super fun.
That's neat. That's really neat. So you mentioned you're building another suit now. And you said is that mostly 3D printed or how does that kind of process work?
The one that I'm working on for myself is kind of like a hybrid. Cause I've got, really, really accurate castings from Screen Used Costume that are one generation away, and I was able to make molds off of those. So I've got some really, really accurate parts, very accurate. Like the suit I have behind me looks cool because it's gold and everything, but it's lots of stuff wrong accuracy wise. And so the new one's way more accurate, but the parts, I've done a lot of fixes by hand, like, you know, Bondo and things, because like the castings are sort of old, so there's some stuff that's warpy or a little weird. And there are certain sections that I'm just completely replacing with 3D printed parts. So it's going to be all like the overall casting is the same, but like the ring, the disc in the middle of the belly, or like the shoulder rings and the neck, they're just too fiddly and mechanical looking to really prepare by hand. So 3D printing is like a really good option for it. So eventually I'd like to have some of those pieces machined out of aluminum once I like really nail down how I want them to you know, be, if I'm 100% like, this is it, this is perfect, yeah, I'll get a machine out of aluminum. But the 3D prints are awesome because they're so cheap and I can experiment. If there's like one little thing I want to change, I can just do a new version, change it, print it, and test it.
Yeah.
And if it's good, you know, whatever, if it breaks, just print another one. It's not a big deal. Yeah. And it's, you know, $20 for a roll of filament and I can print dozens of things off that roll. It's great.
Yeah. So is accuracy, is that like your end goal? Is that what you're moving towards in all the things that you're building?
Yeah. Especially with Repo, there's things that I've just, for my own sanity, I want it to look as right as possible. And there's things that when they're wrong and you know it, you can't unsee it. Okay. So, you know, I look at a picture and almost all of the fan costumes that you see people wearing that are not like a screen use are from the same molds as this suit. So I can pick them out like in a second because there's some just giant tells on them that are very obvious once you know what to look for. And I want to eliminate that. I want it to be like, if I see a picture of my suit, I want it to be like questionable. Like, is that a behind the scenes photo? Yeah. Or, you know, I want to be able to trick myself if I come across a picture, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not necessarily a goal. It's just like me being obsessive. So there's a couple of things that are going to be slightly different because I'm a little bit tall for 3PO. I'm 5'10" and Anthony Daniels is like 5'8". And most of my height discrepancy is in my shins. So like on my new suit, the shins are going to be a little longer so that everything else lines up properly. Gotcha. Whereas this one, I get like a little bit of more of a belly gap there, that obsessive weird stuff, but the belly will be a little bit broad sometimes and I don't like that. So,
yeah.
But the legs are fixed, belly gap gets fixed.
Yeah, yeah.
It's good.
So for folks that are listening and maybe they haven't gotten too deep in the prop building world, especially the costume side of things, if they wanted to go that route, maybe not like a full out C-3PO suit, but like, are there any good starting points you'd recommend? Like, hey, get a 3D printer, start playing around with models, or any tips you'd give?
Yeah,
for people?
3D printer for sure. I think right now, there's a guy that goes by the Happy One. I don't know his real name. He posted scans of the Don Post C-3PO statue and they're really good. So I've actually been reworking last night. I was just working in some of the new components I was making for my suit. I was integrating them into those scans and I'm going to post those for free once they're done. He has the scans up on Thingiverse for free now. And for, I don't know, probably under $500, you could get a printer that can print all of those pieces, even if you had to assemble them. And then, I don't know, $500 printer, maybe $200 in filament, and you could have a whole C-3PO.
Oh, wow.
It wouldn't be gold, and you'd have to assemble it, but that's $700. That's less than the cost of buying the legs from some maker.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And you could have a whole suit. And then you could always modify the scale if you wanted. Like, if you wanted to wear it, you could, like, scale it up or down a little. So there's a lot of handy stuff with the 3D prints. And besides me, there's multiple other people working on making those parts printable as a costume. So yeah, once they're done, it'll be, you know, make it way, way easier, yeah, for people that want to build it, I think.
What's the finishing process like? Because I know a lot of people may be thinking, oh, like once it comes off the printer, like it's good to go. Like there's nothing else that needs to happen.
There is a whole bunch of tricks. I'm actually just about to start making some videos, like right here on the table. I have one of the helmets that I'm about to start finishing out. Basically it's like a lot of priming and sanding and, to get it smooth. There's a product called XTC 3D made by Smooth-On. It's like an epoxy resin that you can put over the surface and it'll smooth it out. I used that for a while, but it's really, really difficult to clean out of detail parts. So I've kind of stopped and now I've just moved over to using straight primer and I started using an automotive primer. You can use regular spray can primer and just have to do more layers, but the automotive primer is really great because it goes on thick, fills in a lot of those lines, but it also sands really, really easily. So it's like strong and very easily sandable, which is a really good combination. And it also clings well to vertical surfaces. So if you're painting, it doesn't drip very easily.
Gotcha, yeah.
And you can still get a thick coat. So that's like where I start. It's mostly primer, primer, sand, until it looks as smooth as I want it to look. And if you want to go to like a full gold finish like this, that's a whole nother can of worms to open up. But it's like I did all the gold on this one myself, and it's took me like 2 years of research to figure out what I needed to do to get started. And then and the process itself isn't that hard, but the people that know how to do it don't like to share it because it's like a lot of them make their living off of it. Yeah. And I can understand. For me, it's like I just wanted to learn it because to have it done was like $3,000 to have a suit chromed. And for me to do it myself was like, you know, a sixth of that price. Yeah. So, and now I can do it myself. And it also makes me less, it makes the parts less precious. So if I'm moving around and I accidentally scratch it, it's a bummer, but I can go repaint the thing if I need to. Gotcha. I don't have to send it off and pay hundreds and hundreds of dollars for somebody else to do it. So that's a good part.
Yeah.
Knowing how to do it.
What about on the like electronics side of things, like, and especially on the R2 builders, like that's a massive component. Like
Is
that something you get deep into in your own builds or?
And I haven't got too deep into electronics yet. I like working in that kind of stuff, but a lot of the things that I've been able to work with are sort of over the counter kind of assembled things. Like with 3PO, I mean, the audio inside is basically like I bought a little amp and then I just took it, I gutted it and then I rewired everything so that it would, you know, so that the sound comes out where I want, but the amp is in the back and it's just everything's, it's not one unit anymore. I just gutted stuff. I've done that with a lot of things, like with the lights, you know, I'll steal a battery box off of like some little Christmas lights or something, or, you know, it's usually just stealing electronics from some other object as opposed to like creating stuff from scratch. The closest I've done like scratch doing any electrical items have not been complicated at all. It's been literally like light switches that come on. It's really, really straightforward, simple stuff. I do, however, want to, in this costume, I'm working on a R2 around here, so I've got R2 pieces all over. I eventually would love to have a semi-static R2-D2 that I can give some general controls to with finger movements.
Oh, cool.
So that I could, you know, if I'm doing like a photo op, I don't have to have an R2 operator there with me the whole time. I can have R2 can like, you know, turn his head, have some random sounds, like three banks of random sounds and maybe like one or two of the like iconic, like a scream or whatever that R2 does. This is all in my head. Haven't approached it yet, but I've been looking into like the triggers that people use for their fingers that like some of the Chewbacca guys will have sound effects. And that way, like when people come up and they ask C-3PO a question that I don't know the answer to, and I have to think about it, I usually will ask R2 and it gives me a chance to like come up with an answer. And then, you know, if I got a good operator, they'll chirp back some R2 noise at me and then I can respond to the person as C-3PO. But so there's times when the operator's talking to a friend and I look over at R2 and he's just standing there like looking in the wrong direction. And the kids are trying to talk to him and I it makes me bum. I'm standing there. I'm just like, come on, you know, 3PO have to reach down there and turn R2's dome to look at the camera. Yeah. So it'd be really nice if I could do like some of those little controls. So that's cool. It's like on my wish list of projects at the moment. So I've been looking into the how to do it, but I haven't even come close to like starting to tackle that yet.
Yeah. That's cool. Kind of the finishing up. So you mentioned that, so GT props, is your, I guess, day to day now. Is that right? So is that models
actually,
contract? Like what's that?
Got an LLC on it.
Oh, really? Oh, cool. So what is,
just recently because they changed the tax laws are all changing now. So like stuff I could write off before I can't write off unless I have a business.
Gotcha.
So I actually like got the stuff done. So I still actually have to set my bank account up for that soon-ish, so that I can, you know, accept payments there. But that's pretty much it. I do. I just build random stuff for people all the time. I do lots and lots of work for Tom Spina Designs. You know, as a contractor, like I do restoration work here in LA because his shop is in New York, and then. Tom also has a company called Regal Robot, and I've worked on a lot of the like preliminary stuff for some of the products that he's done. Like I did a bunch of the 3D work on the Millennium Falcon I did for they have like a big coffee table. It's got like the Millennium Falcon flying through these asteroids. So I did the 3D. We got the model from ILM, had like weeks worth of work to do on it to make it 3D printable. And then I printed it here and did the initial assembly. I did 3D work, a lot of scan cleanup for different items. Like I've got a couple things that I'm working on now that he'll have out soon. We got the scans of like the original Han and Carbonite.
That's cool.
And I did the cleanup for that for like his desk. But I do tons, like probably like, I would say probably 50 or 60% of the work that I do is directly for Tom.
Gotcha.
He just hires me all the time for stuff. So, but yeah, it's fun. And then I get like whatever random projects come in. So
and that's like, you also sell C3 specific parts through Shapeways. Is that right?
Yeah. And like most of them, I mean, we've had those files up there for like probably 6 years or so. And some of them I'm just going to post for free soon because I've done better versions. I'm just going to put them on Thingiverse once I'm really happy with it and I can let them kind of out in the wild. I think that I don't want to be posted until like I'm really like, okay, this is good, you know? But I've got a list of parts that are about to go on Thingiverse for free. So if you got a printer, you can print them at home.
That's cool.
It makes it easier.
Good stuff.
But the Shapeways was good for a long time because the builders, it used to be before 3D printing was as accessible is when I posted them. And then my goal was to make them cheaper than the aluminum parts, but maybe a little better quality than the resin copies that people were selling. So I was trying to hit that middle ground. But now that 3D printing is so easily, you know, readily available, it's like, doesn't make as much sense for people to buy them off of there.
That makes sense. Well, good stuff, Holman. I appreciate you jumping on and chat with me. It's
thanks for having me. It was awesome.
It's so cool. I need to build a C3PO costume now. So
check it out.
So cool. It's so cool. But
if you got a printer, I can get you the file.
Yeah.
So.
I got one. That's cool. So if people want to follow you, it's Gordon Tarpley on Instagram. Any other places you'd send people?
I do GT Props on Facebook. Okay. I try to keep up with that. It gets a lot of messages and I submit. I have to like once a week I go through and try to catch up on stuff. But GT Props on Facebook and then Gordon Tarpley on Instagram and Twitter, but I don't use Twitter as often. Instagram is kind of like the go-to. It's the easiest place to find me.
Gotcha. Sounds good. Well, man, I appreciate it. It was a blast chatting.
All right. Thanks a lot.